The first reading is from the book of Job, chapter 38, verses 1 to 11. Then the Lord spoke to Job out of the storm. He said, "Who is this that obscures my plans with words without knowledge? Brace yourself like a man. I will question you, and you shall answer me. Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me if you understand. Who marked off its dimensions? Surely you know. Who stretched a measuring line across it? On what were its footings set? Or who laid its cornerstone? While the morning stars sang together and all the angels shouted for joy. Who shut up the sea behind doors when it burst forth from the womb, when I made the clouds its garment and wrapped it in thick darkness, when I fixed limits for it and set its doors and bars in place, when I said, 'This far you may come and no farther. Here is where your proud waves halt.'"
The second reading is taken from Mark 4, 35 to 41. That day, when evening came, Jesus said to his disciples, "Let us go over to the other side." Leaving the crowd behind, they took him along, just as he was in the boat. There were also other boats with him. A furious squall came up, and the waves broke over the boat, so that it was nearly swamped. Jesus was in the stern, sleeping on a cushion. The disciples woke him and said to him, "Teacher, don't you care if we drown?" He got up, rebuked the wind, and said to the waves, "Quiet, be still." Then the wind died down and it was completely calm. He said to his disciples, "Why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith?" They were terrified and asked each other, "Who is this? Even the wind and the waves obey him."
I wonder if you spotted the connection between the two readings, did you? At the end of the reading from Job, God says to the sea, "Here is where your proud waves halt." And then Jesus, in our gospel reading, actually does it. He actually stops the wind and the waves. I wonder, what do you think? Could Jesus have done that? Still the wind and the waves. What do you think? Indeed, what would you have thought if you were sitting in the boat and you felt the wind and the waves and the power of them, and then you saw him do it? Just a word of command, and there was a flat calm suddenly. Because I've been thinking this week about cultural arrogance. In other words, our assumption that the way that we do things, the way that we think about things, is the right way, the best way, perhaps even the only way. Now, okay, I grant you that if you've never experienced another culture, if you've never encountered another language, if you've never, say, travelled or lived abroad, actually, if you've never read history or learned a language or done archaeology, okay, then you might find it hard to imagine other ways of doing things from the way that we do them. But when we come to the Bible, when we read the Bible, we still tend to approach it from our modern culture, don't we? Our consumerist culture, with all its natural assumptions. And one of those assumptions is that God doesn't really play a part in our day-to-day life. We assume that miracles, yeah, they don't happen. And actually, in a way, that's the definition of a miracle, isn't it? It's something very rare, something amazing, wonderful, and awesome. But we tend to assume that God's little more than a theory, don't we? That he's not involved in our day-to-day lives, that he's, to be honest, a bit irrelevant. Now, I know, sitting here, you might disagree with that in principle. But you have to admit that many of us live our daily lives with little reference to God. Someone's described us as practical atheists. In other words, the way that we live our lives looks as if we don't believe in God. We don't expect God to show up or to do anything. And in our culture, we tend to think that that's scientific, that that's intelligent, perhaps even superior. But it really, really isn't. One scientist this week said this: "I studied physics because I wanted to know how God made the world." You must understand, he said, that science itself is a Christian activity, because we can do science only if we think the world is rational, the world is comprehensible in principle, that we can understand it. We fleeting matter, scraps of matter in a totally insignificant part of the cosmos, only if we are capable of understanding the cosmos. And he said those are both huge assumptions requiring an enormous leap of faith. And it's a historical fact that science, the rise of science in Europe, was midwifed by Christian philosophers. Galileo, for example, relied and quoted on William of Ockham, Thomas Aquinas, St. Anselm, lots of Christian theologians. It was the belief in God that formed the foundation for scientific exploration and discovery. Thousands of years earlier than that, Job was a bit like a scientist. He believed in God. Believed very strongly in God, but he wanted to know how things worked. In his case, perhaps you remember the story, it starts with great tragedy falling on him and his family. Great suffering piled upon him one day, like buses arriving one after another. And Job asks, why? Why has this happened to me? It's a question that we often ask, isn't it? His mates turn up and tell him that he must have done something wrong. He must have done something to deserve this. Have you heard people say that? People do, don't they? But Job knew that he hadn't done something wrong to deserve this. I mean, nobody's perfect. He knew that. But he also knew that he wasn't to blame for all this tragedy. And he wanted answers from God. He wanted to demand from God why this had happened to him. He doesn't really get an answer in the end. And frankly, even if he did, even if God gave him a convincing answer, it wouldn't really soothe his suffering at all. But what happens at the end of the story is he's put back into a right relationship with God. God puts him in his place, you could say. A relationship of awe and worship of God. And I think that was needed, because all through the book, as he argues with God, he'd begun to think that God owed him, that somehow he was sitting in judgment on God, and that God had better answer to Job, better come up with a good response. And in the passage that Eileen read to us, God reminds him who created who. God's in charge here. I think scientists need that reminder occasionally, because all too easily, like the steward or the manager of a property, we begin to think that we're in charge, we're the boss. And then the owner suddenly returns and demands that we give account. Jesus, of course, in our second reading, Jesus is the Creator's only Son. Jesus is the heir to the property. He's going to inherit it all. But they don't know that at first, the disciples sitting in the boat. Hey, we know him. He's a carpenter from Nazareth. He makes tables and chairs. He's our mate. And they're in the boat, and the storm suddenly blows up, as it does on the Sea of Galilee, violently. And Jesus, on a cushion in the back of the boat, sleeps on without a care in the world. And these experienced sailors, these day-to-day fishermen, they can't believe it. And in their terror, they wake him up. Come on, Jesus! I don't think they actually expected him to do anything about it. They just want him with them, a figure of authority, to bring them comfort. Jesus stands in the boat. Well, that's pretty amazing to start off with in a violent storm, isn't it? He stands and he addresses the wind and the waves just as if they were naughty children, boisterous toddlers who've been misbehaving. Now, come on, stop it. Actually, he often does that in the Gospels. As if he has a personal relationship with every part of creation, even the inanimate bits. He speaks to diseases, for example, in the Gospels regularly. He addresses towns and cities. And actually, you see the same thing in Job if you look carefully. The stars sing like angels. And God speaks to the sea, thus far you may come and no farther. Here is where your proud waves halt. And when Jesus speaks, the wind and the waves immediately respond. The wind died down, and it was completely calm. And the professionals, the fishermen, are astonished, mouths agape. They've never seen that before. But here's another funny thing. Jesus is not surprised. He's not even pleased with himself. I don't know about you, but if I'd done that, I would have said, hey, wow, that was cool. Never thought that might work. I think I might try that again sometime. Jesus doesn't do that. Jesus is completely takes it for granted. Instead, he turns to his disciples and he says, why are you so afraid? Don't you get it? Do you still have no faith? They were terrified, it tells us. Notice, okay, they were afraid in the storm, but now is the time when they're really terrified. When the storm is calm, but they suddenly realize who it is who's in the boat with them. They asked each other, who is this that even the wind and the waves obey him? Jesus isn't surprised. He takes it for granted that creation obeys his command. He created it. He owns it. It belongs to him. But for the fishermen, just like scientists, wind and the waves, well, they belong to, that they obey the laws of physics, don't they? They don't respond to a man's command. Don't be silly. They've not taken account of the authority of the Creator himself. So let me ask you, how about you? What would you have done? Put yourself in that situation. Or indeed today, perhaps you're facing a challenge, an everyday problem. Like Job, it might be loss of property. Or it might be a bereavement or several bereavements, one on another, tragic. Or it might be sickness, loss of your good health. Or perhaps like the fisherman, it might be something beyond your control, like a thunderstorm. How would you react? How do you react? You might be terrified, afraid. You might even be angry. Why has this happened to me? Job was angry. You might want to fight back, throw all your resources at it, pay a lot of money, buy something, get it solved and sorted. Or you might say, that's too much. I give up. I call it a day. Or you can do what Job did and call on God to respond. Say, come on, Lord, I need your help here. I need answers. Do what the fisherman did and wake Jesus up. Science has been a great boon to mankind. We've got so many benefits, haven't we? But science works with regular normality, with day-to-day predictability. This is how things normally function. Okay, we can handle that. But when God steps onto the stage, all bets are off. As he reminded Job, he reminds us that he's the creator. He's the one who owns all this, not us. And gradually we begin to realise that actually even the normal working of the universe is his doing. He makes the world go round. He makes the plants grow. He makes the seasons change. He's the one. He deserves our worship. So how about you? Are you facing challenges today? They may be large or small, but our response to them is crucial. Do we actually respond in a human way? Or do we turn to our Creator and acknowledge him and bow down in worship? Ask for him to step onto the stage of your life, your day-to-day doings. Lay it out before him and let him own it. Let him take control.